If you have a Bible, turn to Isaiah in chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40 this morning. Isaiah chapter 40 is an amazing chapter. It's a wonderful chapter in the Bible. It begins with comfort and it ends with strength. And you gotta like that. And that's why every one of us can relate to this chapter. It's awesome. Let's take a look at the way it ends. Isaiah 40. Last week, Chris got us into the beginning of it. I want you to look at the last verse in Isaiah chapter 40. It is a favorite for many, many people. It says this, well, look, it actually verses 30 and 31 from chapter 40. It says, even the youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Isn't that awesome? Who couldn't use a little bit of divine comfort in their life? Who couldn't use a dose of extra energy or strength for living our lives? The truth is that we run ourselves so ragged in our lives that we're pretty much suckers for anyone who comes along with any type of a potion that'll give us more energy for living. Yesterday, I went on the internet. I was looking to see what was going on with the track meet down in Eugene, and I really couldn't find it. But I was on this sports site, and I came across something. It said, "Are you tired of being tired?" And I thought, "Yeah." You know, the hook just absolutely. And they had Lance Armstrong there, and I'm going, "Well, that guy has never been tired ever. I don't think he's amazing, you know." And so he has a product. It's called FRS. This is not an endorsement, by the way. How FRS works. FRS was originally tested and refined by doctors at the Harvard University Cancer Institute as a fatigue-fighting and general health drink. It was then discovered by endurance athletes who found that it boosted and sustained their peak athletic performance while supporting their overall health. Now FRS is used by anyone who wants a sustained, healthy energy boost. Awesome. I could use some of that in my life. The key ingredient is quercetin, pronounced quercetin. I love how they do this. It's, you know, they always hook you with a Harvard study and a special word, you know. It's like quercetin. I wonder what quercetin is. Well, quercetin is a natural antioxidant found in the skins of apples, blueberries, and onions. So I guess I could just eat apples and blueberries and onions. Or it protects the adrenaline that your body naturally creates to give you energy for small daily tasks like staying awake at work. All right. Or big events like running a marathon. All right, so they pretty much got it all covered, don't they? Isn't this amazing? I tell you, it reminded me of a time in my life, the day when I actually got tired in my life. I remember the day I was 30 years old. 30 is when you get tired. I think what happens is at 30, the caffeine finally blanches out of your body everything that's there. Like any good thing is just sucked away by all the caffeine that you've taken in. And, you know, at about 30, I started getting tired. You know, all of a sudden you go, you know, I got this ache here, and that wasn't there before, and I don't know what's going on with my body. And the energy level's kind of, you know, low, and the kids are driving me nuts and this whole thing. And so there was a guy that I knew. His name was Dan Buck. And Dan Buck was a guy who was like the fountain of youth. This guy, seriously, he has never changed his physical appearance. Like to this day, if you go see Dan Buck, he looks exactly the same way he did 20 years ago and 20 years before that. I think he was born looking like that. The guy's amazing. I'm like, Dan, what do you do? Like, how do you stay like this? He says, oh, well, I eat the Dan Buck mush. And he says, you know, this is what you do. You get sprouted wheat berries. You got to sprout them. It's kind of gross. You soak them, you sprout them. Then you throw them in a blender with brewer's yeast and kind of warm water, and you blend it up, and then you just drink that straight. That's it. All right, you get up in the morning, that's it. So that's what I did. All right, I got up, and my wife is like, you know, you've totally lost it. And I'm getting up and I've got these sprouted things and I'm throwing them in a blender and this brewer's yeast, which if you've ever had brewer's yeast, it's nasty stuff, right? Kind of lukewarm water. And I'm drinking this stuff all to get the energy just to make it through the next day. All of us know what it's like in life to feel that way. And so when we come to a verse like this, in verse 31, those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. We all say, that's awesome. I love the eagle part, you know. I want to have that kind of strength and majesty. I feel more like a chicken, but I want to be an eagle. You know, and I don't mean fearful. When I was down in El Salvador, I got acquainted with chickens in more of their natural kind of lifestyle, you know, not in a cage or anything. I mean, we're down there, chickens are running around everywhere, there's chickens, okay? And chickens are just kind of pathetic, nervous little beasts, you know? They're fighting and scratching and freaking out and running around and everything. And I'm like, that's exactly the way my life feels at times, you know. I want to be an eagle, man. I want to be just flying and soaring and up there and just with the perfect vision and seeing out over the horizon and swooping down unannounced, all these things. That's what I want to be like in my life. And here's this verse with a tremendous promise that all of us can relate. I say, I want that in my life. Okay, so there's the verse. The beginning is comfort. The end is strength. But what about the rest of the chapter? What's in the middle of the chapter? The middle of the chapter is the key to the comfort, and it's the key to the strength. In the middle of the chapter, we find one of the most awesome descriptions of the reality of God that you'll find anywhere in the Bible. This amazing description of the reality of God and one aching, gut-wrenching question that is raised. Let's dial back the lens just a little bit. I want you to go to chapter 40 now in verse 27 and read a question, an issue that is raised. Isaiah 40 and verse 27. Why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord. My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary, and he increases power to the weak, even the youths grow tired and weary, and the young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They're going to soar. There is a question. There's an aching question. There is a gut-wrenching issue that is raised here. Isaiah 40 is written to a people who are struggling to hold on to their faith in God. Verse 27, why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord. My cause is disregarded by my God. This chapter is written to a people who feel like God has forgotten them. These people feel like God has moved on to other things. Perhaps at one point in their life, they felt the presence of God. They felt the hand of God in their lives. Or maybe they heard stories of other people and how God had worked in their lives and they longed for that. But now, they feel like God is nowhere to be found. They feel like the lady who called 911 and got put on hold. You know? It's like, how do you... 911, I'm being attacked. Help me, there's someone coming into my house. Yes, can you hold please? That's what it's like for these people. They're like, you know what? We've got issues, man. We've got Assyria. We've got Babylon. We've got trauma. We have stuff happening. God, why aren't you coming through? And so it's a people who are struggling, feeling that God has abandoned them. I think that Isaiah 40 is really about the struggle to hold on to your faith no matter what you're going through in your life. That's what I really see in this chapter. Hold on to your faith. No matter what you're struggling with in your life. But it's a struggle to hold on to our faith sometimes. And that's why Isaiah uses this amazing term in verse 31. He says, you need to wait upon the Lord. Now, I know in the NIV it uses a different word. If you look at chapter 40 and verse 31, it says, those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. But perhaps the best translation of that word hope, to hope in the Lord, is actually to wait upon the Lord. The King James Version translated it that way. A lot of us learned that version. We love that. Those who wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. But you say, well, how can the word wait and hope, some translations say trust, have faith in God, how can these things be connected? How do you get from wait to hope or from wait to trust? This Hebrew word means to weave together and pull tightly. To weave together. To take two things and just weave them together. To pull that thing tight. The implication is to bind yourself to something and never let go. You know what it means? It means hold on. Hold on tight. That's what it means to hope. It means to hold on tight. You know, that's what it means to trust. It means to hold on tight to something. That's what it means to wait on God. Waiting on God is not a passive activity. Well, I'm just waiting around, dude. I'm just waiting. It's something that it's grasping on, intentionally, proactively grabbing on to something. Hanging on until, you know, you feel like you're hanging by a thread, but you're hanging on. And that thread may be taut and pulled tight, but you're hoping and you're waiting and you're looking. The end of the chapter, it brings us to that point, this great word of counsel, of advice from Isaiah. He says, wait upon the Lord. Those who wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. You know, there's a lot of reasons for fatigue in life. The caffeine may deplete your body of every ounce of vitamin B or whatever it is that you need. But there's other ways of being depleted in life. Just the stuff of life, we get weary of hanging in there. The relational stresses that we feel in life. There's people who are in marriages that you're just wrung out because you've been trying and you're trying to do what Christ wants you to do and you're trying to hang in there and you just feel like you're at the end of your rope and you're fatigued emotionally, spiritually. Or a job situation, or not having a job. There's so many things in life, and then the physical stuff on top of it, and all of a sudden you just feel like, man, I'm just really losing energy here, you know, in my life. And Isaiah says, you need to wait upon the Lord. And so Isaiah helps us. Here's how Isaiah helps us. With our faith, our trust. He helps us by reminding us of the greatness of God. And that's the center of the chapter. He reminds us of the greatness of God. And it's what we need to hear. He reminds us that God knows the true measure of all things in this world and in our lives. Go to Isaiah 40 and verse 12. Isaiah 40 and verse 12. Now God knows the true measure of all things. And this is part of the greatness of God. Now, it's weird. Like, why do I need to know this? How does this help? Okay, you went from strength and all this stuff. I'm with you. And now you're talking about God knows the measure of all things. How does this help us? Well, this is what Isaiah talks about in the middle of this chapter. Take a look at verse 12. It says here, beautifully, it says, Who has measured the waters in the hollow of His hand? Or with the breadth of His hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? Now, verse 12, I used to read verse 12 and I thought that it was a verse about the hugeness of God. Because God is so huge that He can measure the waters in the hollow of His hand. So, His hand is big. Now, later in the chapter, it says that He spans the universe and all the stars with the span of His hands. Like, well, it's about how huge God is, right? I mean, who can measure the mountains? Somebody's got to be bigger than the mountains to do that. So God is huge. And I used to think it was all about the hugeness of God. But when I read it again and I really thought and prayed about what's being presented here, I realized that it's not just about God being huge. What this verse is about is it's about measuring things. The whole verse is about measuring things. It's kind of cool, really. Who measured the waters in the hollow of His hand? Who can measure the waters? There's a lot of water out there, you know. People in Mississippi, they go, there's a lot of water here, you know. You go out to the Pacific Ocean, you go, man, there's a lot of water in this place. Who can measure this? How would we actually begin to measure this thing? Or with the breadth of His hand marked off the heavens. There's that verse about the heavens and the span of His hand. But marking it off, you know, it's like a measurement, the span of a hand. They'd say in the old days, they'd say, how big is it? Well, it's five spans of a hand. You know, it's not the most accurate thing in the world, but you get the idea. It's, you know, God can measure. He is able to measure that. The next part of this verse says, who has held the dust of the earth in a basket? The word basket is actually a measuring tool. It's a means of measuring. So it's cool because it goes from the heavens and the span of His hand to the fine particles of dust and measuring those. Who can measure these things or weigh the mountains in scales and hills in the balance? It's all about measurement. It's all about relative size on a scale. That's weird. How can that help? So yesterday I poked around a bit and I found an amazing site. It's an amazing website. It's a Nikon.com and it's the universe scale. Universe scale. I don't know. It's just universe and scale put together in one word. And this site is kind of amazing. And they claim to be able to show you the scale of all things in the universe. That's a big claim to me, but here's what it says. It says, from the nano world to the universe, the worlds we measure using our infinite yardstick. They have an infinite yardstick that they've created, and you can find it on the web at Nikon.com. They say, we are able to view all entities from the micro world to the universe from a single perspective by setting them up against a scale. We are able to compare and understand things which cannot be physically compared. Today, using the electron microscope and astronomical telescope, we can see objects which we did not know even existed before. Are you able to fathom or even roughly grasp their sizes? And then you hit click and it has this ambient music in the background, sort of this pulsing emo. And you hit this thing and this flash player comes up and the next thing you know, it's like the universe. Stuff is falling in. And there's a scale. There's a grid going across. And the universe comes in. And then there's this thing going across the bottom. And you hit smaller and it goes. From the universe, it goes Milky Way. And then you see the grid change. And it comes in. And then that explodes. And it goes, the Earth. The grid changes. Earth. And then it has light years scrolling across the bottom and all these dimensions. And then it gets to Earth and it changes to meters. You go from light years to meters. It's amazing. I get it. Like, I'm getting this. It's amazing. And then it goes from Earth to mountains. And then from mountains to people. And from people to bugs. And from bugs to atoms. And from atoms to particles. And it's all on this grid. And thanks to Nikon, I finally get it. I can fathom. I mean, I'm telling you, I can fathom the universe now. Thank you, Nikon. Okay. It is kind of mind-boggling. You know, and we want to know about things and the size of things. I told you about the CERN particle accelerator in Switzerland, which is going to be fired up in August. Put it on your calendar. No, I'm serious. Put this thing on your calendar. Put it on your calendar and pray that you don't win the lottery. Okay? Because here's the thing with the CERN particle accelerator. Sorry to get off on all this stuff, but I kind of get geeked out about it. The CERN particle accelerator, it's 300 feet below the ground, and it's miles, like 17 miles in a circle with these super-cooled magnets. They're going to shoot like protons through this thing and then collide them together and take pictures of them. And this is what they're doing. It's kind of an amazing deal. Okay, some people are concerned about this because of the safety of the collider. They're worried about it. And I just love what they say here. It says, the safety of the collider, which will generate energy seven times higher than its most powerful rival, has been debated for years. The physicist Martin Rees has estimated the chance of an accelerator producing a global catastrophe at 1 in 50 million. Long odds to be sure, but about the same as winning some lotteries. So here's what they're going to do. They're going to try to find antimatter. All right? Like, this is real. I'm not making this up. This is what people do. Okay? People do this. They're going to try to find antimatter. And antimatter is what makes a black hole. And a black hole is what sucks everything into it, and it goes away. All right, that's what they're doing in August. Mark your calendar. Mark your calendar. All right, there's a guy, a scientist, who tried to get a court order to stop this thing. Because he says, we're all going to die. Like, do you understand? There's people going to court to stop this thing, so they will not do this in August. All right? Because they're like, you know, it's like the kid playing with his chemistry set at home, you know, and then he blows the room up. It's like, wow, this is so cool. Blows the whole thing up. It happens. All right? Just trying to find the little particle, just trying to measure things, just trying to find the scope of things from the smallest to the largest. And people are pretty excited about that. And nobody can actually discover the scope of all things. But God knows. God knows. God knows from the smallest particle to the largest object, He knows it all. God can measure it all. He knows not only its measure, He knows its meaning. He knows what it is, what it's for, its relative value as well as its relative size. This is the God who measures all things in His infinite wisdom and knowledge. This is the God of the Bible. It's the God that we believe in, that we put our trust in. Why do we need to know this? You need to understand that God knows what He's doing. And though God can measure all things truly and accurately, and not just their size, but their meaning and their value and their purpose, no one can measure God. God's wisdom and His knowledge and His greatness are without bounds. You cannot measure it. Here's what it says in Isaiah 40, in verse 13. Who has understood the Spirit of the Lord? Now, what's really cool is that in the Hebrew, where it says understood, it's another word for measurement. You don't really catch that in English. Some translators actually translate who can measure the mind of God. I like that. It's really cool. All right. Because you see the contrast in the Hebrew poetry, it's so beautiful. It's measure, measure, measure the world, measure the mountains, measure the stars, measure the particles, measure. And then he turns around and he says, okay, God basically says can measure all that, but nobody can measure God. God is beyond measurement. And I love the way it goes on to say, who has understood or measured the Spirit of the Lord or instructed Him as His counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten Him or taught Him the right way? Who was it that taught Him knowledge or showed Him the path of understanding? You know, Isaiah helps us because he reminds us of something. He reminds us, God knows the true measure and meaning of all things. He really does. He knows everything that's going on in your life. He knows what it means. in your life. He knows what it means in our world. Not only that, God knows what He's doing. His wisdom is without measure. And nobody can tell God how to do His job. He can't do it. Have you ever had someone try to tell you how to do your job who didn't know what they're talking about? No. Isn't that irritating? They show up, you know, you're doing your thing, and they say, I don't think you're doing that right. You need to change. You need to do this. And it's just irritating. I know, because I do it to people all the time. I irritate them. I'm like, I think you had to change it. And they're like, just leave. Just go away. All right? You're a nuisance. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay. And yet, here we are. We're trying to tell God all the time how to do His job. Well, God, we know better than you. I know that your knowledge is infinite, and you can measure mountains and galaxies and quarks and dark matter. I know that you can do all that, and you know how it all fits together and what it all means, but I need to tell you how to do your job in my life because I really think you're messing up here. Okay. So Isaiah reminds us, you know, God, He knows all things, and He knows what He's doing. He knows what He's doing. You need to trust Him. And then He tells us one more thing, and this is really maybe where it all comes together. He reminds us that even our greatest fears and problems are never bigger than God. They're never bigger than the Lord. Okay? Take a look at it in verse 15. Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket, and they are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they were just fine dust. Now, the nations are a drop in the bucket. Why does he say this? Because the nations are the scariest thing in the world to the people of Israel at this moment. It's the nations that have caused the heartache. It is Assyria who marched across with an army of 200,000 and came to the gates of Jerusalem and greatly troubled them. It is Babylon that marched across the world and came to Israel and deported them and took them into slavery. It is the nations that represent their deepest fears and hurts and difficulties in life. And God says, the nations, they're like a drop in the bucket. And God says, and I know how to measure really good. I know how to measure, and I know the measurement of this trouble, of this problem, of this issue, which to you seems monumental. It seems overwhelming. It seems insurmountable. And God says, I know the measure of it, and it's actually a drop in the bucket. It's nothing but dust to me. God reminds us. He says, you know, even your greatest fears and problems, they are not bigger than God in your life. Here's what it means to have faith in the Lord. To have faith in the Lord, it means to never let your troubles or your problems become bigger in your heart and your mind than your God is. Don't ever let your troubles become bigger to you than God. And that's a challenge. That's a struggle. That's where we say, oh man, I've got to hang on. I've got to hang on, because that sounds kind of abstract. I mean, Pastor Guy's up there talking about particle accelerators and, you know, websites with scales and scope of all things. It all sounds very flowery and philosophical and everything. But I'm going to go home today and I got a problem. All right. I got stuff going on in my life that's immediate and it's real and it hurts. So what do you do? Well, Isaiah, his ultimate word of counsel for Elijah is this. He says, wait. Wait. I want you to wait. I want you to wait on God. You say, hey, if God is so great, so wise, so powerful, then why am I going through this stuff? Why isn't the situation different? Why isn't my life changing and these difficulties going away? And my answer is wait. Just wait. Wait on the Lord. Do not give up. Do not throw in the towel. Do not let go of your faith. Hold on. Hold on tight to your trust in the Lord. It's the best thing that I can tell you to do. Now, some people will say, I'm not going to hold on to that. That's too abstract. I'm going to grab on to something more tangible. That's what the Bible calls idols. Isaiah 40 is also in the middle part of it, there's a section about idols. He says, who will you compare me to? And then he starts talking about idols. Because what happens is in our lives is we let go of our faith in the God of the Bible and we grab onto lesser gods. We grab onto that quick fix. We grab onto that thing that we think is going to get us through or ease our pain. Something like that. We bail on our situation and we go off and pursue things in an ungodly way. That's idolatry. And Isaiah says, don't do it. He says, wait upon the Lord. He says, if you wait on the Lord, he says, you're going to find strength in your life. Get that view of God back. Get into the Scriptures. Review these things. And see what God will do in your life. And that brings us to our communion service today. We're going to have communion today. And I want to ask you to think about something. We've talked about the measure of things. We've talked about the measure of your problems and my problems, which seem big to us, but in the scope of God, they don't seem quite so big. We could talk about the limitless nature of God's wisdom and His power and all of that. But can I ask you a question before communion? What do you think the measure of God's love is? What is the measure of the love of God in our lives? Let me read to you a verse. 1 Peter chapter 1. In verse 18. For you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your forefathers. Right? Not silver and gold. So on a relative scale, the silver and gold, you go, that's pretty good. Pretty valuable stuff, right? He says you weren't redeemed with that. Verse 19, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. And through Him you believe, you trust in God who raised Him from the dead and glorified Him. And so your faith and hope are in God. Now let's put that into our grid, shall we? The relative scale of things. Not silver and gold, but the blood of Christ. This precious Lamb of God. Before the foundation of the world, before Nikon made their site and created their grid for our viewing pleasure. Long before all these things, in the heart and mind of God is this sacrificial love in Christ. In a point in time in history, became a concrete reality for our world. And it's all about the blood of Christ. What is the measure of the love of God for your life? It is the blood of Christ. And don't take it lightly. See, today we have communion. Don't take it lightly. You're going to hold in your hand today that cup which represents the blood of Christ. Don't take it lightly. It'll seem light. It'll seem small. One drop of the blood of Christ is more precious than all things. One drop of the blood of the Son of God given and sacrificed is more precious than all things. But that cup that you hold with those few drops in it represent an ocean of God's love for you. One drop of God's power, of His wisdom, of His greatness is enough to overcome all things in your life. But you have more than a drop. You have an ocean of God's love given to you in Jesus Christ. His grace overflows to us, the Bible says in Ephesians chapter 1. His grace is lavished upon us. What is the relative value of things? For God so loved the world that He gave His Son, His only begotten Son, that whosoever would believe, trust, hope, hold on to Him would not perish, but have everlasting life. This is the measure of God's love. You see, God's economy is different than ours. It's just different than ours. The things that we are so focused on in God's economy, they're not always the focal point. And the Lord says, lift up your eyes. Look up. hold on. Trust. The Bible reminds us of the greatness of God. Reminds us of who He really is. And beyond Isaiah chapter 40, in other chapters, it reminds us of the greatness of His sacrifice. And that's for you and me. Now, if you believe that, if you trust in that, you're going to find some strength in your life. That's God's promise, and I'm here to tell you it's true. No matter what you're going through today, do not let that thing become bigger in your mind or your life than the reality of God. Let's trust in the Lord together. I'm going to move over here. We're going to have communion. I want to share a song with you, and I'm going to invite you to sing along in a moment as well.